So our next case for argument, United States v. Orlando. Mr. Hillis again.
May it please the court, my name is Daniel Hillis. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office, and I represent Mr. Orlando on this appeal. He asserts three errors. The first two are matters that have been conceded by the government, and those are whether or not the district court should have held a full resentencing hearing rather than a limited resentencing hearing, and whether the district court failed to consider post-incarceration rehabilitation. Since the government has conceded both of those, I'll move on to the third issue unless the court has questions on those two issues.
Well, I have a question. Does Mr. Orlando understand that if we remand, as he has asked, things can get worse? As things stand, he has a 40-year term of imprisonment and no supervised release.
Yes. However, if he is to have a remand and the district court would be persuaded to accept the government's thoughtful recommendation for 35 years, he would trade the opportunity to go back and be resentenced and get...
But the one possible outcome is that it will go back and he'll get 42 years plus supervised release. The Thompson opinion and its successors are clear that the reason for the full remand is because the district judge may want to increase the length of the imprisonment in order to make up for lax terms of supervised release, lower duration or laxer terms. So one thing that can happen on remand is that your client will end up with 42 years and supervised release and be worse off. Your client understand that can happen?
Yes, we discussed those possibilities with all of our clients. And it was his decision to file the appeal and proceed in this fashion. He's aware of the risks, Your Honor, but there's also much to be gained here if the case...
Well, he hopes there's something to be gained, but it certainly wouldn't surprise me if the district judge said, what do you mean rehabilitation in prison? There isn't any opportunity in prison for the sexual abuse of minors, and so the fact that he hasn't done it is no evidence of anything.
I believe they have a treatment program in the Bureau of Prisons for that, Your Honor. And it wouldn't be limited just to that. It's whatever evidence of post-incarceration rehabilitation that he could present by way of a disciplinary...
He's entitled to do that. That's what a full resentencing means.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that he really understands that things can get worse as well as better.
Yes. As a full resentencing, which he agreed... which he sought and which was part of the joint motion, he understands that the court would always have the authority to impose whatever sentence it could have at the original sentencing. So he's well aware of that. And if I may then proceed to the issue of the breach, because I believe that is very clear here. Record 21, paragraph 22, specifies that the government was required to recommend a term of incarceration of 35 years. The government's brief at page 15 specifically acknowledges that it did not do that, yet it contends there was no breach of the plea agreement. And frankly, I don't understand how that can validly be asserted that it wasn't a breach when there's the acknowledgement that the recommendation that was required by the plea agreement was not made. So I believe that for purposes of plain error, which is the governing standard of review, there is breach and there is a specific, clear violation of the requirements of the plea agreement.
What was their response? Did they make a recommendation as to the number of years?
No, not at the resentencing hearing.
So that was my question. So they didn't dispute the 35, but they didn't say anything.
Right, and they had an affirmative obligation under the terms of the plea agreement. Paragraph 22 required them to recommend a 35-year sentence. So under this court's jurisprudence, the appropriate remedy, provided that the prejudice has been established, and I rely on
my... Did anybody suggest to the district judge that was in there? Your Honor, we believe the plea agreement also required the government to recommend 35 years?
No. Was not stated. Nobody brought it to
Saved
the court's
attention. Saved you a trip to Chicago.
It would have been wonderful, right. But it wasn't done. And so here we are. And it provides Mr. Orlando with the opportunity to go back in a full resentencing and hopefully with a different judge who would be now persuaded to have a recommendation by the U.S. Attorney's Office. And their recommendations therefore they carry clout.
Why do you say by a different judge?
Because I think under specific performance, the law requires that not only is there a requirement that the government goes back in front of the court and make the recommendation, but it gets assigned to a different judge.
What decision of this circuit do you think supports that?
I believe it was Diaz-Jimenez.
I don't understand. Usually the resentencing is by the same judge.
Yes, but not in specific performance.
But the problem.
Context.
The problem was there was no recommendation made to him, and it's pretty hard to fault him for coming up with his own.
It's not a fault of the district court. It's a lapse by the government. And it was inadvertent, but even under Santabello, inadvertent breaches of plea agreement still trigger the right that we're seeking here.
Not statutorily, though.
No. But it would, if the decision would be otherwise, it would be in conflict with Santabello, no. Not to mention this court's own.
This is a little odd where we've got a plea agreement that specifically sets it out. It's before everybody, and you end up with a different sentence that nobody said anything about at the time it was given out.
I don't think it's much different than the context of Santabello. If in Santabello, the prosecutor went in and wasn't aware of what the plea agreement required and made a sentencing recommendation that was contrary to what was required, the relief was given.
An affirmative recommendation, though. Here there wasn't anything.
Yes, and the plea agreement specifically required a recommendation. So by saying nothing, there's a breach. And it's a serious one, and it was under plain error.
I don't understand why it should go back to a different judge.
Conceptually, as I understand it, it is because the judge now, having had the parties before him, will have been influenced by what had happened before. The likelihood of the outcome that's necessary for it to really be affected is to have a fresh set of ears. In any event, Diaz-Jimenez required that it was not only a different judge, but it was a different prosecutor who would go before the new judge and make the recommendation in honoring the plea agreement as the terms required.
We're being pushed further and further for us to make the sentence, right?
I beg your pardon? Oh, no, sir. No.
Well, that's what it amounts to, because it's 35 years in the plea agreement. We know what it's going to be when it goes back. He's not going to go contrary to what the agreement is.
I don't know why the judge went contrary in the first place. The government doesn't always ask for light sentences, and 35 years isn't light. It was thoughtful and considerate of them, with the seriousness of the offense, to recommend in the plea agreement what they chose to agree to, and they should go in and recommend 35 years and do it forcefully. Otherwise, they should never have struck the plea agreement they did. Unless the court has questions of me,
How old was he when he started serving the sentence?
He was in his early 30s.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Hillis.
Thank you.
Mr. Koenig?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Koenig. I appear on behalf of the United States this morning. A lot of things, in Judge Kaney's words, probably could have saved us a trip to Chicago today, and the government certainly bears some responsibility, in my view, for not nudging Judge Randa in the direction of a full resentencing. We could go on a detour about why the government didn't do that. I'm not sure how fruitful it would be. The fact that it was not a full resentencing, though, is very consequential. The term of imprisonment was not on the table at Mr. Orlando's resentencing. For that reason, there couldn't be a breach, much less a breach that survives plain error review, one that affected Mr. Orlando's substantial rights and seriously calls into question the integrity and fairness of judicial proceedings. So we would request simply that this be remanded to Judge Randa. There was no breach, and therefore no reason to reassign it to a different judge when it goes back yet again. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have, certainly.
Remand with directions?
Perhaps, Your Honor. I think it would behoove the prosecutor who handles the next appearance to go before the judge with a checklist of things that need to be accomplished so we don't come back to Chicago a third time.
Well, certainly if the shoe had been on the other foot, in other words, if this had been something that the defendant failed to do, we'd be all over you for not having raised it to the district judge.
Well, but the consequence of not bringing this up really falls more heavily on Mr. Orlando.
No, I understand. That's what I said. If we're different. All I'm saying is that these were things that both sides knew. A simple comment to the district judge would have indicated he could have said, well, I'm not sentencing him to that. I'm going to give him what I gave him,
right.
Which would have been unlikely, I would think.
In fairness, I think, first of all, the judge was very forceful. Almost the first words out of his mouth were, I interpret the remand order this way. It's going to be very narrow.
Well, I understand.
There was a little bit of confusion in the case law, although certainly it was trending in the direction that these different components of the sentence are part of a package and they need to be considered together. So if it goes back again, obviously, first of all, it has to be a full resentencing.
Well, the judge could reject the sentencing agreement to begin with, right?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The judge could have rejected this plea agreement.
Well, in fact, he did in the original sentencing. We recommended 35, and he gave a sentence of 40 years.
But this time you came back again with 30.
Well, we'd still be bound by the plea agreement, so that would be one thing. There would be the post-incarceration rehabilitation. There would be avoiding the errors that happened at the first sentencing hearing. And then I think there are some questions that aren't really raised in this appeal, but they have to do with whether you have to impose a term. I think probably in a case like this, it was mandatory. And whether you have to impose conditions or whether they can be delayed. Again, those aren't squarely presented in this appeal. But those are things that the government will want to think about carefully when we go into the next sentencing here, whether it's in front of Judge Randa or some other judge.
Is that one of the issues in this case? Am I confusing with another case about delayed imposition or delayed choice of?
Well, Your Honor, what the judge did was he didn't impose a term of supervised release or conditions of any kind, and indicated there will be supervised release, we'll address the conditions shortly after your release.
That clause is blatantly illegal, right. Has no effect, and I rather trust that this won't happen again on remand.
Yes, sir, that's exactly what I was alluding to. For starters, there would be a 5-year mandatory minimum term of supervised release that would, in my view, have to be imposed.
It's actually something of a puzzle that the United States has not filed an appeal in this case. Supervised release is mandatory. It was not imposed by the district court. There's a legal error, but of course you have an appeal. And this is one of the reasons why I was asking Mr. Hillis if Mr. Orlando knows what he's getting in for, because on remand, the district court will be required to impose supervised release. As things stand, there's no term of supervised release. Maybe an illegal sentence, but in the absence of an appeal by the U.S., there is just no term.
You
heard Mr. Hillis's answer. Mr. Orlando is taking his risks.
It's an excellent point, Your Honor. I guess in light of our concession, we didn't think it was necessary to raise that affirmatively as an issue, but you're right. You're absolutely correct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Hillis, do you have anything further?
Yes. The government filed with Mr. Orlando a joint motion for resentencing per Thompson. There's no mistake about what it did, and there's no mistake about what Thompson required, full resentencing hearings. I heard a member of this court once refer to Thompson going off like a bomb across the Seventh Circuit, full resentencings. So there could be no doubt that the parties certainly knew that there was a full resentencing. Furthermore, if the judge read Thompson, as I assume that he did, he knew that it was a full resentencing. So there could have been no mistake. And even if it was, it comes back to sort of inadvertence, which Santabello contemplates and rejects as grounds to do nothing. Relief is still appropriate under Santabello. A full resentencing was required under Thompson. And yes, my client would willingly trade 5 years of incarceration for 5 years of supervised release that would be statutorily required and live under the necessary conditions of supervision.
Okay, well, thank you very much again, Mr. Hillis.